Yes, on Tech Thursday, we call it. I'm thinking, maybe call it daydreaming, about how there's a real generational split regarding video games. I mean, my parents are of the pinball era, where arcade games equal juvenile delinquency and time-wasting, basically. Me, I'm solidly a child of the 70s and 80s, where being good at a video game just might qualify you to join an intergalactic army of heroes to save the universe.
It started with a game, but it wasn't just any game. One night,
we have to talk about a matter of utmost importance. I've seen him come and I've seen him go, but you're the best, my boy. Light years ahead of the competition.
Yes. The Last Starfighter was an 80s movie, but since then, movies about video games and the games themselves have morphed into something much more mainstream, much more socially interactive, and with totally awesome graphics. Baratunde Thurston is a Takeaway Tech contributor and host of Popular Science's Future of, a TV show on the Science Channel. Also joining us on the line is Clive Thompson, technology writer and frequent contributor to Wired and the New York Times Magazine. Baratunde and Clive, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good to be here.
So it seems to me we are far along in this video game era that I've sort of roughly traced here, Baratunde, to see some real permanent changes in human beings, both cognitively, socially, in all kinds of ways. What does the research say, and what does it show?
Well, it sounds like there's sort of at least five benefits of video gaming. There's social, there's a sort of new storytelling format and the way of interacting with other people. It's a mental workout. It's fun. And there's also the ability to destroy things.
Right. Well, keeping the destroying things for a moment, is the mental workout idea supported by research and actual experience, Clive?
Yeah. There is some early research that suggests that we really do get some interesting things that happen. There's been studies, that, for example, to show that if you play Tetris a lot, it increases the white matter in your brain. And that is, when you have the more white matter in your brain, the more sort of efficient you are at doing certain types of thinking. And there's been other studies that show that surgeons, you know, if they play laparoscopic surgeons, if they play video games before they do surgery, they actually have almost 40% fewer errors, because it's sort of getting their eye-hand coordination up to speed before they do a delicate task like that.
They've also been testing this on Parkinson's patients and people who have eye problems. But, you know, something that, Baratunde, that you mentioned, the social thing, is what brought me to the other side on video games, because I always had a prejudice against them growing up.
Oh, you're one of those.
I always imagined, you know, the 40-year-old, you know, playing in his mother's basement in his underwear. But my son is very much into them, so I decided to play World of Warcraft with him,
right,
to be involved in what he's doing. And I have to say, World of Warcraft, which is a multiplayer online game, mm-hmm, not only has these incredible social communities on it, but certain things you have to accomplish with groups of sometimes up to 25 people, and he's had to learn how to be a team player, or they won't invite him. He won't be able to get anything done.
You got reputation involved. It's a little society, and you learn to be a member of a society with the values and reputation and cost that goes along with that. And just a note on the 40-year-old living in his mother's basement. In this economy, that may not be such an outlander.
It's mainstream, exactly. You know, in Second Life, there's the experience that they had with, and that's, of course, an online, not a video game, but it's an online interactive community of avatars, where stroke patients have actually gravitated to Second Life because it's a greater way, better way to communicate than they're able to do physically. In some sense, Baratunde and Clive jump in here. We shouldn't be surprised by this. I mean, pilots are trained in simulators. Astronauts are trained in simulators, right, Clive?
No, absolutely. I mean, the idea that games could affect your behavior is intuitive, because all sorts of areas have used them, to sort of train people at doing things quickly. And the thing that's really interesting is that the research has started to branch out to look at sort of these very unexpected ways that games might be good for you. There's a piece that came out earlier this year that completely fascinated me, which is the idea that you could use Tetris to treat post-traumatic stress syndrome. Now, people think of PTSD as something that happens if you go to Iraq, but most often happens when you have a car accident. And so what they've discovered is that if you get someone to play Tetris for 45 minutes or so after a car accident, it might seriously decrease the amount of flashbacks they have, because essentially it occupies the visual cortex so much that you don't take all those flashback images of being in a car accident and read them into your brain as well.
So everybody who works in a cubicle who's been hiding their Tetris from their boss can now say, I'm just doing therapy for my PTSD.
Oh, that's interesting.
Absolutely.
That's really interesting.
There is a danger here, though, and that's where I think parents get worried, is they don't want their kids sitting there for 9 hours on a Saturday playing a game instead of never getting outside, never actually... non-virtually, like really interacting with people, or college students who famously go to college, spend all their time playing games, and let their grades suffer.
Well, and also, if the games have such a good impact, Clive and Baratunde, we should be really worried about
real life.
I mean, the Miami Vice. What is it? Grand Theft Auto.
Right.
I mean, that really will have an impact.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, like, the video games are designed to be very addictive. I mean, people are paid tens of millions of dollars to make these things as addictive as possible. So it's absolutely true that the great danger with them is that you're just going to want, you'd rather play them than eat, you know, and that's absolutely true. So, I mean, like, you're absolutely right. That is a central danger with them. And brain training is sort of great up to a point. It should also be pointed out that there's, in addition to being some really good things that they're coming out in the research, there's a lot of very crappy pseudo research out there. This idea that these brain training games can, you know, prevent Alzheimer's and improve your mental facility when you're older.
So, you know, that, so watch that the marketing. Watch the marketing on the box. Okay, finally, you know, this great book, Ender's Game, posits that, in fact, video games are part of an entire universal simulation where we're all being watched and our skills are being monitored and we'll all be inducted into some sort of universal hero force. Do you buy that, Clive? I want to believe it's true.
Well, you know, this is the funny thing when you talk about World of Warcraft sociability. There's a lot of companies now that when they go to hire someone, they say, "Well, we need someone that runs a World of Warcraft guild."
That's great. I do.
There we go. It's great.
That's great. They're basically saying we need someone who's already sat there in front of a computer and tried to organize 40 people.
Using Skype. Put it on Craigslist. Put it on Craigslist. Baratunde, take us out very quickly.
Two years of my college GPA suffering can attest to the fact that I was really training to save the human race.
That's right.
Clive Thompson, author of the science and technology blog Collision Detection, frequent contributor to the New York Times Magazine and Wired, and Baratunde Thurston, takeaway tech contributor and host of Popular Science's Future of. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
I should have put that on my resume when I applied. Yeah. I'm the GM of a guild in World of Warcraft. You know, that's my true calling.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.